meeting now about the Thunder Board, Keith, and I'm going to come and read it to us from Matthew 14.
Matthew chapter 14, verse 22 to 36. Immediately, Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to the other side, while he dismissed the crowd. After he had dismissed them, he went up on a mountainside by himself to pray. When evening came, he was there alone, but the boat was already a considerable distance from land, buffeted by the waves because the wind was against it. During the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went out to them, walking on the lake. When the disciples saw him walking on the lake, they were terrified. "It is the ghost," they said, and cried out in fear. But Jesus immediately said to them, "Take courage, it is I, don't be afraid." "Yeah. Lord, if it is you," Peter replied, "tell me to come to you on the water." "Come," he said. Then Peter got down off the boat, walked on the water, and came towards Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid, and beginning to sink, cried out, "Lord, save me." Immediately, Jesus reached out his hand and caught him. "You of little faith," he said, "why did you doubt?" And when they climbed into the boat, the wind died down. Then those who were in the boat worshipped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." When they had crossed over, they landed at Gennesaret. And when the men of that place recognized Jesus, they sent word to all the surrounding country. People brought all their sick to him and begged him to let the sick just touch the edge of his cloak, and all who touched him were healed. Amen.
Thank you.
Yeah. All the way through Matthew's Gospel, as you know, we've got to the point where Jesus and his disciples have recently had some bad news. John the Baptist's disciples have already been to tell them that John's been executed by King Herod, and now there's a further development. Herod has heard reports about Jesus' teaching and healing, and he's come to the conclusion that he must be John the Baptist, risen from the dead. So what was he going to do about that? Well, it was best for Jesus and his disciples to move away from Herod's territory and go to the other side of the Lake of Galilee. Perhaps he also wanted to spend some time there with his disciples, teaching them more about who he was, what his mission was going to involve. And we can piece together what happened next by comparing the stories in Matthew, which we've just read, in Mark chapter 6, and in John chapter 9. So if you hear me say something and you think I didn't notice that in the reading, it's probably because it's from one of the other Gospels. So we find that Jesus and the disciples took a boat and they quietly set off for the northeastern shore, not far from the town of Bethsaida. But it wasn't going to be that easy to find a little peace and quiet. The crowds who'd been following realised what had happened, and they made their way around the top of the lake. So when Jesus and his disciples arrived at what was normally a deserted spot, they found hordes of people already waiting for them and pleading with Jesus to heal all the sick they brought with them. And so we have the familiar story of the feeding of the 5,000, which we heard last week. We know that Jesus' teaching went on till the late afternoon, and then he miraculously fed them all. And finally, Jesus sent the crowds away and told the disciples to take the boat and go on ahead of him. John tells us their destination was the town of Capernaum on the northwestern tip of the lake. So they've sort of got to just cut across the top. they must have expected that Jesus would join them later by walking the 5 miles or so around the northern edge of the sea. Perhaps we should remember that Capernaum was familiar territory to the disciples. Jesus had made it his headquarters once he'd left Nazareth, and Peter and Andrew and James and John had their homes there. Now they were probably looking forward to being back with the families, having a good meal, sleeping in their own beds for once. But things didn't work out quite like that. They were tired, of course, but they set off, rowing across the top of the lake. But the wind was against them and it got stronger. They didn't seem to be making any headway at all. In fact, by the time it was what Matthew describes as the fourth watch of the night, that's between 3 and 6 o'clock in the morning, they were still only about 3 miles from their point of departure, and they were finding it a real struggle to keep going. Maybe they spared a thought as to what Jesus might be doing. They were probably aware that he'd gone from the place where he fed the 5,000 up into a mountain to pray. It was often his custom to do that. But surely by now he'd finished praying and he'd started on his walk around the lake to meet them. Perhaps as he decided to break his journey at Bethsaida. Perhaps he was even now resting comfortably, whilst they continued to struggle on doing exactly what he'd told them to do. They start to feel a little bit resentful of where they're just too tired to do anything but try to keep going. Sure, we can understand either of these emotions when it seems God's asking us to do more than we're able to do, and he doesn't even make his presence really felt with us. Time went by. The night dragged on. The disciples were still struggling against this headwind. Was it time to admit defeat and turn back? Had Jesus been unreasonable in telling them to go across the Capernaum? Or did he, brought up in the Galilean hills, just didn't realise what he's asking of them in this different environment? He certainly kept them waiting that night, probably till they were coming to the end of their own resources. And then, after hours of struggling, they suddenly caught sight of something behind them, moving on the surface of the lake. It was difficult to make out what it was. Perhaps with a certain amount of moonlight, or even the first signs of dawn. But as it came nearer, they realised it was a person actually walking on the water. But how could that be? They looked at each other in growing alarm. Was it a ghost? Or what would such an apparition mean? Were they a much greater danger than they'd realised? They couldn't prevent themselves from crying out in fear. And immediately was a response from the figure, and they recognised the voice. "It's all right," said Jesus. "It's me, myself. Don't be afraid." Now, if you read Mark's Gospel, he seems to indicate that he wasn't intending to stop and get into the boat with them, but keep on going. Did they think he was going to just continue to where he was going and leave them to their own devices? Was he just intending to tantalise them with a glimpse of his power and not come to their aid? Maybe for a moment it felt like that. We've all had times when we wonder why the Lord seems to stay just out of reach and getting further away over time. Or perhaps we should be reminded of Jesus' encounter as a stranger with two of his followers on the road to Emmaus after his resurrection. Then it seemed he was going to continue on his way, but they pressed him to stay with them. And over a meal, they suddenly recognised him. Jesus had kept going over the sea, trusting the disciples to recognize him, realize that he was in control of the situation, and find that just that was enough for them to find new strength and follow him to the shore. Is it enough for us to be aware of his presence through faith and continue in the way he's set out? Was this the act of faith that he might have expected from the disciples as they became aware that he was actually there with them? We won't know, because something else happened. Just as the rest of the disciples were accepting what he said, Peter spoke up. Trust Peter to do that. You can just imagine thinking, can't you? Exchanging looks with each other. That's Peter all over. Was Peter convinced that it was Jesus or not? Was he showing faith? Or was he testing what he'd heard? Lord, if it is you, he said, tell me to come to you on the water. Come then, was the reply. Imagine the thoughts of the rest of the disciples. Their only place of safety in the midst of the wind and the waves was the boat. The last thing they would want to do was to leave it. But Peter, he seized the side of the boat, heaved himself over and launched himself forward. I don't think we can reasonably imagine him skipping happily over the waves towards Jesus until fear suddenly overcomes him. The word for walk, used in the original version of the story, is one which indicates a beginning of action and a sense of purpose. He started to walk with every intention of getting to Jesus, but he was scarcely out of the shelter of the boat before he came fully aware of the strength of the wind and he began to sink. But for one glorious moment he was aware of what was possible when he was fully trusting in his Lord. But his good intentions weren't enough. Very quickly his faith faltered and cried out to Jesus for help. He was in very real danger and Jesus was very prompt to reach his hand out and pull him up out of the waves. And ask a question. In his New Testament in modern English, J.P. Phillips puts it like this. Jesus said, "What made you lose your nerve like that?" What's he implying? Is he saying, "You initially dared to trust me, aren't you able to carry on trusting?" Don't lose your nerve. Peter's moment on the lake was over as quickly as it had begun. He was pulled up into the boat, Jesus came aboard too, the wind dropped, and they were able to easily finish the journey. Later in his life, Peter must have looked back at this incident and maybe wondered what would have happened if he'd managed to keep his attention and faith fully focused on Jesus. Did he recognise his limitations and just be grateful that Jesus had been so quick to rescue him? Or did he regret that he hadn't been able to trust more completely? When Mark records the story, which he'd received from Peter, he doesn't mention Peter's particular part in it, and nor does John. But Matthew was one of the disciples. He'd seen it all. He recognised how Peter had been so eager to reach Jesus that he was ready to attempt the impossible. And he remembered how when Jesus was in the boat with them, they were all amazed and worshipped him as the Son of God. You know, it had only been a matter of months since they'd seen his power over the wind and the waves when he'd stilled the earlier storm in Galilee, but they still reacted as though it were a complete surprise that he was Lord over the forces of nature. What's more, less than 24 hours ago, they'd experienced the miracle of feeding the 5,000. And yet, when Mark records how astonished they were at what they witnessed on the lake, it adds the telling remark, but they're not understood about the loaves. The hearts were hardened. They'd seen that Jesus had accepted their inability to deal with the problem, and he provided a miraculous answer. He made the impossible possible, as Mike was saying last week, and he'd involved the disciples in sharing what he'd provided. And Harry must have hoped that they understand he could provide not just physical food, but all the spiritual nourishment they needed. It should all have been making them more aware of who he really was, and yet they seemed to not be able to grasp it for more than just the immediate situation. New problems made them forget what they'd learned about him in past problems, and they had to be reminded again and again of his love and his power. We might sometimes wonder if Jesus felt discouraged by this lack of understanding. But then again, perhaps we're helped and encouraged by the fact the disciples were so human in their behaviour. Jesus wasn't gathering a band of superheroes around him. He was working with ordinary men, with the ordinary doubts and the ordinary failings that we often recognise in ourselves. And let's not forget that these same ordinary men went on to do extraordinary things after Jesus' resurrection and after the empowering of the Holy Spirit. That was still in the future, though, and we have the benefit of hindsight. So then again, we should be even more aware of what the Lord's able to do. But for the time being in the story, for Jesus and the disciples, it was back to business as usual. They came safely to shore, not at Capernaum. They landed instead nearby, by the plain of Gennesaret, where Jesus was quickly recognised and the people began to gather again looking for healing. The disciples still had a lot to learn and to understand and to believe. But the time was coming when they'd be able to understand not just the lesson of the loaves and the fishes, but the walking on the water, the Lord's provision, protection, his presence, his power in times of need, the fact that he had the ability to make enough out of their inadequacy. And above all, they learnt more about himself. Just the same sort of things that we also need to learn and to remember. In a minute, we're going to sing another old hymn, which I'm sure most of us will be familiar with. And in the middle of it, it says, "Guard us, guide us, keep us, feed us, for we have no help but thee. Yet possessing every blessing, if our God, our Father be." Let's sing that.